produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today, roadside drug screens to be used in the United Kingdom. The Scotsman newspaper today announced that roadside screening devices capable of detecting quote-unquote drug drivers are expected to be available to law enforcement within 2 years. The UK government is set to move forward with the introduction of oral fluid testing technology, which can detect the recent presence of illicit drugs in one's saliva. Such technology is currently being used by police on a trial basis in Australia and has been previously tested in several European countries and a handful of U.S. states. The Scotsman reported that senior UK law enforcement officers are anxious to see the introduction of a screening device to replace the current method of testing, which involves putting drivers through a series of physical tests to determine whether they are impaired by drugs. The UK Home Office is expected to issue guidelines for the tests, such as appropriate drug cutoff levels, later this year. Previous studies of roadside oral fluid testing technology in Europe have yielded mixed results. The largest pilot study of the devices found, quote, oral fluid devices that were tested were not satisfactory for use at roadside, either in terms of ease of use, duration, sample volume needed, sensitivity, and reliability, close quote. However, police reported that they, quote, prefer to use an oral fluid test that is imperfect rather than no test at all, close quote. Under many United States, quote-unquote, drugged driving laws, police only need to show that a driver has trace levels of a drug or drug metabolite in their system to be prosecuted under the law. More information on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. We've got a spectacular stash of audio for you today. Take a moment to join us at Normal. Visit norml.org. First up today, an important interview with Dr. Mark Lamont Hill on snitching and witnessing.
I'm not Tupac and I'm not Biggie, not Slim Shady and no, not 50, not Rakim, Nas, Jay-Z, Busta or a New Jack Hustler, but I still dust ya. I'm not Tupac and I'm not Biggie, not Rakim, Nas, Jay-Z, Busta or a New Jack Hustler, but I still dust ya.
J-Dax. 5'9¾". A beanie sport, true underground beat supporter. Keeping sorta a low profile, shorter. A street reporter, keeping all of my speeches in order. Breaching the dysfunctional border, I enter buildings with cats from L.A. to Loma Linda. Founding member of the.
Today on the Audio Stash, we're going to talk about the topic and phrase of snitching. The term has quickly become mainstream, but both the word and concepts evolved in urban hip-hop cultures across America. Joining us today is Dr. Mark Lamont Hill, one of America's leading hip-hop intellectuals and assistant professor of urban education at Temple University in Philadelphia. Dr. Hill, welcome to the program today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again for joining us. You recently wrote a piece called A Treatise on Snitching, which I found fascinating as it highlighted the moral and ethical struggle involved. You know, first let me ask, what kinds of misconceptions of snitching do you see out there right now in America?
I think the biggest misconception two big misconceptions surround this idea of snitching. One is that it is a historically unique circumstance or practice. That is that the hip-hop generation in particular has begun to engage in something that is not connected to a broader and longer tradition. The second thing is that an anti-snitching position is viewed solely as a rejection of civic responsibility, as opposed to perhaps a more complicated, complex, nuanced, and principled response to a set of historical and current legal circumstances that demand a different type of response.
So when faced with the situation of having to snitch, where does our loyalty go first?
Well, it depends. Many people are taught, particularly people who are on the margins of society, gays, lesbians, poor people, black people, many immigrant populations, many people are taught to side with the state. It's ingrained in all Americans, in fact, in many ways, to side with the state, to trust the state, to trust the government, to trust authority. I mean, from the moment you enter school, you're taught to give a certain type of respect and deference to authority figures. The problem is, particularly for people on the margins of society, authority figures aren't always acting in the best interest of the people. And so many people, in spite of the fact that these state apparatuses aren't operating in their best interest, still go to them. Other people recognize the fact that those government institutions or those authority figures or those structures more broadly are not acting in their best interest, and they side with other social commitments. For example, Lil' Kim made a decision to side with her crew, with the people who associated with her, the people who supported her, the people who she loved, as opposed to siding with the state, even though the odds are stacked against her. Many gang members, even if you look at Tukey Williams before he passed, one of the conditions that prevented many people, and Arnold Schwarzenegger owned up to this, you know, one of the things that prevented people from granting him clemency was the fact that he refused to, quote unquote, snitch on many of the activities that his gang had participated in. So he made a certain type of commitment that was, in his estimation and mine too, morally sound.
So this is a huge decision that an individual has to make, and you know, frankly, many say that you know, stop snitching might be an easy route, but it certainly is. You point out Tukey, he certainly took the hard route, and the hard route that came with staying silent.
Exactly, it's often, not always, but often a very, very difficult decision to make, because whenever you snitch, whenever you tell someone else's business, there's a politics around it, and there's an ethical dilemma and a moral quagmire that inevitably emerges that must be resolved by forcing a person to choose between two competing social commitments, two competing value systems, two competing authorities. And making that decision is always a difficult one, or usually a difficult one.
So, you know, why is it that people will decry a Tukey or Lil' Kim for staying silent, but those same attitudes are not in place for a reporter like a Judith Miller or, say, White House politicos who are nearly applauded for the same behavior? You know, why is it that people view this white-collar, so to say, non-snitching so different than when people in urban hip-hop culture stay silent?
One is because people don't presume that the hip-hop generation has the type of critical reflection and moral authority to make those types of decisions. So people from the beginning assume that if Judith Miller is willing to sit in a cell, that if Judith Miller is willing to sacrifice her career to defend Scooter Libby, that it must be moral, it must be ethical, it must be principled, it must be reflective, it must be quite thoughtful of her to do such a thing, whereas no one gives that type of legitimacy to Busta Rhymes or Lil' Kim from the gate. Because, and that's not about those individuals, it's about the hip-hop generation, and more particularly about hip-hop culture, and its ostensible lack of critical reflection, moral authority, and intellectual acuity. We know that that's not the case, but that's often what's ascribed to us. So just from the base, people don't assume that they could even be thinking about those issues. But also, there's a certain sense that certain authorities should demand a certain type of deference, such as the police. So no one wants a stop-snitching posture to affect police work, whereas they may not be as reluctant to see stop good on journalism or a different type of police work. For example, with Judith Miller, there were different issues at stake, and so people, I think, were more than willing to consider more or less willing to concede that to her. Whereas when people are getting killed on the street, when you have gun violence, you have, when you, and this is a legitimate critique, when you have gun violence and people dying in the hood every day, there's a different type of prioritization that goes on. People say, look, you can have these principles, but people are dying, and we need to make some decisions about that. And I think that that is also a legitimate thing to consider.
Dr. Hill, it seems in some ways, and this is, you know, just an opinion, that the moral and ethical fabric of the individual cultures in America, like urban hip-hop culture, perhaps have built a stronger moral fabric within themselves.
Well, in some areas, yes, but I don't want to romanticize or overestimate, you know, the accuracy of hip hop culture's moral compass either. I mean, when you really think about someone like the Busta Rhymes case, where it doesn't seem to me there is this moral impulse, or this ethical impulse. It's more about protecting his career. It's more about protecting a certain sense of masculinity. I'm not a snitch. And perhaps even a selfish sort of thing where he's scared of the repercussions of it. That's not necessarily morally ethically sound, and it's no more principled than I would say some of George Bush's demands for silence from members of his administration. So I don't want to always say that, and not just on a celebrity level, but also on a day-to-day level. Much of the stop snitching calls that have been made within neighborhoods have degenerated into don't be a witness, don't be responsible. When you see an old woman get knocked over the head and her pocketbook taken, don't say anything. And the idea of saying anything has become anathema to people in the hood sometimes. And that is equally problematic. So, again, I don't want to make it seem as if hip-hop generation has it all figured out and we're just misunderstood. In many ways, the commodification of this anti-snitching or stop-snitching position has resulted in a watering down of the message and an inversion of the value such that it doesn't necessarily mean what it used to and doesn't necessarily stand for anything positive anymore.
I was amazed in your article about the parallels, really, between urban hip-hop culture and big American politics, particularly when it comes to this idea of wet and dry snitching. And tell us a little bit about these two strains of snitching.
Well, dry snitching, to me, in many ways, reflects some of the ethical and moral dilemmas that emerge when a person has to decide what type of storytelling and perhaps even truth-telling they're going to participate in public and private and maybe even counter-public spaces. In other words, dry snitching is about what happens when you snitch without snitching, when you tell on someone indirectly. The hip-hop community often talks about people who talk indirect, people who say things indirectly. Dry snitching emerges from prison culture. In prison culture, there are moments where you are forced to fight or someone provokes you to fight. Because of the consequences of backing down from a fight, a person has to be creative and find other ways to get out of that fight. And so one of the things the person would do is to yell back at the person, to wolf back, and to wolf back so loudly that a guard would hear them. And then the guard would come over and break up the fight and thereby saving the person who was initially scared. That's a way of calling, but he didn't call the guard. He did something to call the guard's attention. So that's what dry snitching comes from. Also, there's a sexual connotation to it, obviously, wet versus dry, and what that might mean in terms of the anatomy. But when you think about dry snitching in that context, you now think about people who tell on people without positioning themselves as snitches. That's what happens when a rapper like 50 Cent comes out and makes a song implicating a whole bunch of New York's underworld. That's what happens when Kobe Bryant gets under police custody and immediately, for no good reason, implicates Shaq and saying that Shaq did certain things that he perhaps should not have done that were not illegal but perhaps immoral, not as a way of getting out of the crime but as a way of perhaps developing a certain type of camaraderie with the police, but also surely knowing that it would get out and therefore would tell on Shaq. You have these tell-all novels. We could think of Jose Canseco. We could think of Karin Steffens. We could even think on some level of Terrell Owens' latest book, where he talks about certain things that happened behind the scenes in the locker room that historically have remained silent within hip-hop, in football culture. All of these things are moments of dry snitching where your intention isn't to snitch, supposedly, but you end up telling other people's business. And the problem with dry snitching, of course, is that you've now made a choice to not honor a particular commitment that you made, either implicitly or explicitly. For example, with Karin Steffens, who wrote a book called Confessions of a Video Vixen, she tells this cautionary tale wherein she acknowledges that she had sex with all these celebrities. Now, she's decided to get religion and tell the truth about her sexual encounters. But what she's also done is break this code of secrecy that she established with all these celebrities, many of whom were married. Now, one could argue that that is an immoral position that she took or that they took in the first place. That might be true, but again, there's a dilemma there. Do you honor the first commitment you made, or do you honor the second one that you decided to make? That's dry snitching, and that's some of the issues that emerge. Wet snitching is less about the ethical. I mean, it's about ethical issues, but it's more centrally concerned, I think, with the ghetto snitching industry for me, and the ways in which snitches, government informants, government paid storytellers, are used to replace legitimate historic police work to handle prosecutions in a much more expeditious but not necessarily efficient manner, and to herd a whole bunch of black and Latino bodies into the prison industrial complex. Wet snitching is when you make the decision to act as a paid or otherwise compensated informant for the government. Currently, one out of four black, well, really one out of three, somewhere between one out of three, one out of four, young black men are under criminal supervision right now between the ages of 20 and 29. It's no surprise then that one out of 12 currently function as snitches within the community, usually in exchange for reduced criminal liability more so than money, and continued police protection. That's a very, very dangerous circumstance, because now suddenly when you think about nightclubs, when you think about bars, when you think about community spaces, to know that one out of 12 black men are currently operating as snitches, you have to consider the consequences of that in terms of fragmenting community, destroying trust, not just between community and police, but between community members and other community members, not to mention invasion of privacy issues. Now, the counter-argument, to be sure, is, well, if they're not doing anything wrong, they have nothing to worry about. But we know, historically, that that argument has never held up, that violation of civil liberties from McCarthyism through COINTELPRO right on now through the NSA's most recent activities, none of that stuff holds up supports an argument that says that if you do nothing wrong, you'll be just fine, because people who do nothing wrong all the time are implicated. The U.S. has historically developed enemies lists based on some of the information that's developed through these things. But in black and Latino communities, it's even more vicious, because people aren't just being placed on lists. They're being herded into prisons. And of course, we know that we can't necessarily rely on the information provided by snitches, so it's not even accurate information, which, again, I think undermines the claim that if you don't do anything wrong, you have nothing to worry about. Lastly, when you look at people who are wrongfully killed, you know, 40% of people die, you know, through capital murder, you know, through the electric chair, lethal injection and such. 40% of the people who die wrongfully are killed through, or are prosecuted, are found guilty, more specifically, through snitch information or misinformation. So it's a thoroughly dysfunctional system that, in the name of effectiveness and efficiency, has ultimately undermined the integrity of the whole process and sacrificed the lives of a whole bunch of black and Latino bodies. That's wet snitching, and that's a critical issue, and that is the predicate for the hip-hop generation's critique of snitching.
That was an incredible number to encounter in your article, the 1 in 12 being informants. You know, are all of these informants paid?
To be clear, it's 1 in 12 between 20 and 29, according to Alexandra Natapoff's most recent study. She's a law professor out at Loyola. It's 1 in 12 between 20 and 29 years old. But they're not all paid informants. Most people who act as informants, in fact, do it in exchange for reduced criminal liability. You get picked up on a drug charge. Instead of getting prosecuted, you agree to remain in your community and make controlled drug buys for, you know, and you know, once a month, and to report any other illegal activity that goes on. The problem is, of course, again, that people are going to lie and give misinformation, but also people aren't necessarily going to snitch on the right people. So instead of the big fish getting snitched on by the little fish, thereby eliminating the drug trade, for example, because that's really what this started around, oftentimes the big fish becomes a snitch and snitches on the hand-to-hand drug deals on the corner, which doesn't eliminate the trade. It just keeps it alive, in fact. Also, the snitch may say your girlfriend leaves you and she gets a new boyfriend. You may end up snitching on him because he's stealing cable and selling small amounts of marijuana out the back of the house. One could argue that that's illegal, too, and should be prosecuted, but not at the expense of the larger drug dealers, which is what's happening.
Dr. Hill, let's go back to a point you mentioned earlier. You know, how can urban communities bring themselves back from this epidemic of wet snitching and the stop snitching rhetoric? How can they bring themselves back to being true citizen witnesses?
I think the first thing that is required is a certain acknowledgement, and because part of this is a generational issue, a certain acknowledgement that the hip-hop generation's critiques are legitimate, that there is some legitimacy to the position in the first place. And by acknowledging the fact that many people are acting as informants and that many people are engaged in a principled response, the community can then begin to have a certain type of conversation about snitching, a certain type of conversation. That's the first thing. The second thing is that communities need to begin to police each other in ways that we historically have. There are a whole host of reasons that particularly Black and Latino communities aren't policing themselves in the same way. One is a greater influx of people who don't own homes. There's, again, greater intervention of police. There's the labor issues. There's the, you know, there are a whole host of issues why people are broken up that we can't get into all today. But the fact is that the community need to come together and organize and find ways to police themselves so that the person who, so that there's a desire to protect the lives of an 80-year-old, a life of an 80-year-old woman who gets robbed in broad daylight. That's a problem. But the community needs to have a sense of community in order to acknowledge it as a problem. Also, we can't merely engage in a sort of self-help, Bill Cosby-esque position that reduces the responsibility and liability of the state itself. So we need to also, in addition to policing ourselves and being more responsible, we need to also demand different types of protections for people who do step up. The fact is, in no city in America is there a witness protection program. That's TV, you know, where you tell and then the police protect you. I mean, there are witness relocation programs where they'll force you out of your community. There are programs that will, you know, that will protect you until you go to trial. But once you go to trial, that's it. It's not uncommon in Philadelphia. Just, you know, a few weeks ago, someone's house was firebombed after they did the responsible thing and witnessed. So we need to install some sort of protection. Now, we know logistically it's impossible for the police to protect everyone who testified. But again, we need to create mechanisms that demand more from those people meaning the police and other government authority figures. That, I think those are key issues that will promote witnessing, but also on the popular culture end, that I would love to see some critical issues. I mean, can you imagine the significance of Jay-Z saying, "I'm no snitch, but I'll be a witness"? That kind of position that Jay-Z could take, that a LL Cool J could take back in his day, that a Run DMC could have taken in their day, or that, you know, any popular culture figure could take in their particular moment of extreme popularity. That type of move would help create a different type of public conversation about witnessing versus snitching, which is essential for mobilizing the hip-hop generation and the generation coming up behind it to engage in something a little more responsible.
Dr. Mark Lamont Hill is author of the piece, A Treatise on Snitching, is one of America's leading hip-hop intellectuals and assistant professor of urban education at Temple University. He can be found at marklamonthill.com. We have links to his website and his blog at normalaudiostash.com.
Never incomplete when I'm on the street. Only time I halt and screech is if my cell is beep. It could be mitress or release. That's wifey and seed. An emergency with them, well then I leave. If not, then with my rhyming I proceed. Breathing in the secondhand smoke from y'all's weed. I'm not Tupac and I'm not Biggie. Not Slim Shady and no, not Finney. Not Rock Kim.
Next up today, a hip-hop artist from Alabama contacted us through the Donate Audio section of normalaudiostash.com to grant podcast permission for the next track. Here's J Money C with Blowing Trees.
Gotta start my day. First I thank God, then blow up none of hate. Hey, step out in this yard, what the weather like today? Day. Holla at my broad, but I know what she gon' say. Say, every time you come over, boy, your ass cold. Smell your phone, you hit the corner, cause it's in your clothes. I already hear smoke coming out your nose. When are you gon' stop this? I really need to know. Sorry, shawty, but you know I gotta get my mind right. When I hit the studio, it helped me get my rhymes tight. Blowing on the booty, or that purple cushion limelight. Made me knock your booty out like that nigga Iron Mike. I don't never harm shit, I be cool and laid back. Never thought of trying crack, I just wanna blaze fast. Sex of them trees till a nigga looking lazy. Stop smoking weed, nah, shawty, you was crazy. Nah, if you come smelling my clothes, you can tell I be those. So don't be asking why the hell a nigga eyes so low. It's cause I'm low in trees, blowing, low, low in trees, blowing. Nah, if you come smelling my clothes, you can tell I be those. So don't be asking why I'm buying all this food at the store. Man, I've been low in trees, blowing, low, low in trees, blowing. Let me take you boys back to a couple days ago. My partner hit me up and said he got the hater blow. The bag had more damn C's than a lazy hoe. With sticks poking out the side like an 80 foe. But I still copped it cause I knew it was a dro. Wasn't nobody burning but I smelled it through the dojo. Plus the bag was fuller than the lips of Jackie O. He said he got it across the border off of Mexico. So I'm riding down the street blowing on the pine. Then I hit a blue and red. Get behind. What's the problem, officer? I was on the speed. Smells like to me that you was blowing on the tree. Shit. Step out the car and put your hands on your head. And if you're trying to funny shit, then I swear your ass dead. Hey, you got the wrong smell, sir. This is my cologne. Just give me the rest of that shit. You take my gas off. Nah, if you come smelling my clothes, you can tell I be those. So don't be asking why the hell a nigga eyes so low. It's cause I'm low in trees. Blowing, low, low in trees. Blowing, nah, low. If you come smelling my clothes, you can tell I be those. So don't be asking why I'm buying all this food at the store. Man, I've been low in trees. Blowing, low, low in trees. Blowing, low. People ask when you gon' stop smoking, Jason. Take a drug test, you can't get an occupation. You don't make it rapping, you ain't gonna mount the Nathan. Bitch, I get dough like caps on graduation. Not an alcoholic, never drive when I drink. But getting dough when I stank equals money in the bank. When I'm trying to make my ends or even talking to a stank. 9 times out of 10, I be blowing on the drink. Nah, if you come smelling my clothes, you can tell I be those. So don't be asking why the hell a nigga eyes so low. It's cause I'm low in trees. Blowing, low, low in trees. Blowing, low. If you come smelling my clothes, you can tell I be those. So don't be asking why I'm buying all this food at the store. Man, I've been low in trees. Blowing, low, low in trees. Blowing, low.
That was J Money C with Blowing Trees. We have links to his MySpace profile up at normalaudiostash.com. Thanks to Jay for that track. And if you're an artist seeking podcast play here on the Audio Stash, click on the donate audio link right up at normalaudiostash.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Paul Armentano, Dr. Mark Lamont Hill, and Alan St. Pierre for contributing to today's show. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the great PodSafe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 420 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.